Members will call this meeting to order. And we'll start off with approval of minutes. Anybody want to arm wrestle for that? Or?
I will.
Okay. Representative Franzen moves the minutes. Any questions? Seeing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and we have approved the minutes. First up, we have House File 1766, Representative Lohmer's bill. And we'll let Representative Lohmer make the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I would like to move that House File 1766 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
Very good. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. House File 1766 is a pretty straightforward bill which states that child care subsidies cannot be used to pay union dues. The taxpayer dollars that have been allocated for children's care should be spent on these children's care. So I thank you so much. I appreciate your support for this bill, and I can stand for any questions.
Very good. Questions, members? Questions? Otherwise, we can take testifiers, and there will still be opportunities for questions. We have a list of testifiers. Cisa Keller from Minnesota Child Care Association. And I'm going to read off the list here, and if you could kind of queue up behind the testifying table, that'll help save a little time. Dana Ackrey with Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association, Jennifer Parrish of Rochester, Heather Falk from Cloquet, Judy Sanda from Carleton County, and Pat Gentz from Dakota County. If you could kind of come up and queue up behind the testifying table. Ms. Keller, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cisa Keller. I'm the Government Relations Committee Chair for the Minnesota Child Care Association. MCCA is an association of over 200 privately owned and operated licensed child care centers in Minnesota. We are here today in support of House File 1766, which would exclude the use of child care assistance dollars for the use of paying union dues or fair share fees. The Child Care Assistance Program is a program intended to help low-income families with their child care expenses while they are working, looking for work, or pursuing their education. These funds have been significantly underfunded since 2003 and currently do not reflect the true cost of care in Minnesota. So every penny of these funds needs to go towards providing services for these families, or the remainder of the cost will become the responsibility of the families. While the original intent of the Child Care Assistance Program is to is a back-to-work program for low-income adults, there has emerged a second function of promoting school readiness skills for children in our care. MCCA's concern is that with an already very low reimbursement rate, the potential use of CCAP dollars for union dues or fair share fees would become a disincentive for providers to even accept CCAP families in their programs, therefore reducing the number of child care choices for families. Currently, Minnesota has over 7,000 families on a wait list to receive child care assistance. These families have all demonstrated that they could be working immediately if they had help with child care assistance. These numbers demonstrate that every dollar of child care assistance needs to be used for services and services only. Thank you.
Members, any questions? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Keller, I'm wondering if you can talk to me a little bit about the funding level for CCAP. You mentioned that it's been underfunded, and I know there was a cut to that in the last budget cycle. So I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about the level of funding.
Sure.
Ms. Keller.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, yeah, currently there was a 2.5% rate cut that was proposed for the Child Care Assistance Program last year. That was the first time in a long time that we've actually had a cut. There has been no increase in funding since we were cut significantly in 2003. Probably the best number that represents where we're at is the federal recommendation is that parents who are receiving child care assistance should be able to access about 75% of the providers in their area. And I'm just pulling up the most current numbers, as of 2010, instead of 75% of the providers being being available to these families, In rural Minnesota, only 41% of family child care providers and only 30% of centers are eligible or would be covered by that reimbursement rate. In the metro, for family child care, it's 34%, and for child care centers, it's 33%. So that is significantly lower than the 75% recommendation. So for the most part, these families are not able to access most of the providers in their area without having to be subsidized through their own pocket.
Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Keller, can you just explain that a little bit more? There's a 75% standard, and is it because I just need to understand what those percentages represent when you say a family can't access.
So,
Ms. Keller.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, basically the idea is if you kind of think the families are given an authorization and they should be able to take that authorization to 75% of the providers in their care, and that authorization should cover the cost of their care. What it's currently covering is more like, you know, between 30 and 40% of the providers. So it's not, it doesn't cover the actual cost of care. And so the difference between what the reimbursement rate is and what the providers are charging, either the providers need to absorb in their own businesses, or they need to pay that back, they need to have their families pay on top of already, you know, determined co-pays and things like that. Does that help?
Yes.
Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Keller, is there enforcement of this, if this is a federal standard?
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, it is a recommendation, and the department is here too, so they could certainly talk to that, but it is a recommendation, and I'm not sure where we are within national standings, but we're getting pretty low to being some of the lowest reimbursement rates in the country. So.
And Mr. Chair, just one follow-up, please.
Representative Murphy.
Can you describe for me the waiting list?
Yes, absolutely.
The waiting list, it seems to me when I was on the Early Childhood Committee, in my first year, the waiting list was around 5,000 families. And now it's 7,000 families. Is that accurate?
Ms. Keller.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, correct. It's actually the number, I believe, in November was 7,195. And that is families, the basic sliding fee is families that have demonstrated they meet the eligibility to provide child care, to receive child care assistance while they're working, but there's not enough money to actually give them that child care assistance, so they're on a wait list. So those are 7,100 families that are working, have jobs, and all they need is assistance with their child care, and they cannot receive it because there's not enough funding. So these are working families.
Representative Peterson, and then Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, you know, these funds for CCAP were put in to help working families. What does that do to our workforce when parents can't, or parents or providers can't get the reimbursement and parents are on waiting lists? Do we have any data on that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson.
Ms. Keller, we haven't elected you yet.
That's a great question, and that is very concerning. I mean, these families that are able to work, if they don't have anywhere to put their children, they are potentially not able to work, or they're putting their children in potentially unsafe situations or not being able to make the choices that they truly would be able to make if they had that assistance. From a provider standpoint, if we're not getting reimbursed at the true cost of care, we're not able to necessarily do the things that we know are right by our children. So, you know, we may not be able to pay our teachers the rate that they made, the salaries that they deserve. We may not be able to do the improvements to our classrooms or curriculum or things like that. There are some providers that have just decided that they need to stop taking children that receive child care assistance because they cannot viably do that anymore. They can't absorb those costs anymore. So, you know, I know that there are providers within our association that if there's any more reduction in that reimbursement rate, they will stop also taking those children. So,
members, I'm inclined to allow leeway here for conversation. I'm not trying to cut off any legitimate discussion, but I'd like it if we could focus this on the bill. We're not a finance committee, and yet I'm okay talking along these lines, but the bill, I don't believe, goes to the level of funding right now, and if we could talk about the bill, that would be preferred. So, Representative Peterson.
Well, I do think they're related because we're talking about level of funding, but you really did answer already one of my questions I was going to ask, and that was if providers would actually opt out, because I know many providers that I know don't take children who are subsidized because it is harder, more requirements, children who are in and out because parents are working, then not working, And very often those are the children that need the most assistance, the most help, and ought to be in quality programs and getting the kinds of service that they need. But thank you anyway. Bye.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry if I missed this, but you're representing the Minnesota Child Care Association?
Mr. Chair, Representative, correct.
Ms. Keller.
Yeah.
And Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you just explain, again, maybe I came in just a bit late, maybe I missed it, but how many providers do you represent, and what do they need to do to belong to your organization? Do they pay dues? If you could just give us that background.
Ms. Keller.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so we have over 200 licensed child care centers that are part of our association, and they do pay a due per se to belong to that association.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're representing child care centers, not in-home providers, correct?
Ms. Keller.
Mr. Chair, correct.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Keller, is it? Okay. Ms. Keller, can you just explain to me how the CCAP program works? I mean, and what does a child care center do to be a part of that or to be funded by CCAP?
Sure.
Members, again, if we could focus on the bill. All right. I'm inclined to allow some leeway, but we're not really talking about the bill right now. Ms. Keller.
Mr. Chair, Representative, families, are you talking about how families receive child care assistance or how centers?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Keller, the CCAP program, you're funded partially by the CCAP program, right? I mean, is the CCAP program like a voucher that goes to a family, or do you bill and for services rendered and then get payment after that service is rendered?
Mr. Chair, Representative. Once a family has received an authorization, they'll come to a provider. You know, they'll choose the provider that they would like to go to. The provider will then, you know, enroll them in their program. Once we've actually rendered the services, we then actually bill the county, and we're paid for the services rendered after the fact.
Representative Vosh.
Okay, Mr. Chair and Ms. Keller, are there any restrictions on CCAP dollars that go to a child care center on how you can use those monies, or can they be used for association fees? Can they be used for charitable contributions, or are there limitations in that area?
Ms. Keller.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the funds come in and they're you know, rolled into our budget as far as trying to operate the center. So they're part of the operation costs of our center. So, you know, our argument is really just that those costs don't cover our costs at this point. And so we just don't really feel like any other money should go to, it should just go to the services and not to anything else other than the services or what's part of providing those services. So whether that's curriculum or lease or, you know, wages or things like that, but it's part of the business.
Representative Vosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Keller, just for clarification's sakes, since it goes into the operations, can a child care center use those CCAP payments to be a member of your association or advocacy association?
Ms. Keller.
Mr. Chair, Representative, our position is that none of our providers actually accept 100% of CCAP children. Most of our have to do a mix of private pay and CCAP children. And so we would say that, no, we would actually say you couldn't use any of those funds, and you could use the private pay funds that are coming from our private pay families if you were going to use those dues, if you needed to differentiate those things. But that the state dollars really need to go to just the services rendered. So,
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Keller. So then theoretically, a provider, whether they be a center or a home, if they're not 100% funded by CCAP, that same argument could be made in the issue when it comes to any union membership.
Ms. Keller.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that would be our position, correct? Yep.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little bit, Ms. Keller, in... So a little bit concerned because there was a comment made that might be disparaging to the lower cost providers. You know, I think I have more confidence in our child care providers that no matter the method of reimbursement, that they work hard to give good care to the children with them. So I'm a little concerned that some of this is tied to an implication that if they are a lower cost provider, maybe, or somebody isn't able to, in their child care center, something like that, serve this population, that somehow that means they're relegated to something inferior or inappropriate or incompetent or something. And I just have confidence in all of these child care providers that they are doing a good job. And I think there are extra services sometimes that are maybe involved in some situations, or there's extra costs because of facilities or other things. So I just want to make sure we don't harm anybody's reputation and imply that they're somehow inferior. Not just a comment, Mr. Chairman.
Any response, Ms. Keller?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I absolutely agree, and that was not my intent of my comment. Really, the intent of my comment was just that if we run one of the biggest and best parts of the child care assistance program is it's built on parent choice, and so we want to make sure that parents truly have a choice and they can make those decisions and not be limited in their choices because of the allocation that they've received. So are only given one or two choices versus 10 choices. So that was really what my comment was aimed at.
Okay, thank you. We have Dana Acri is up next. Dana, welcome to the committee.
Please
introduce yourself for the record, say who you're with, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dana Acri. I am a child care provider myself. I am also here representing Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association, which serves many family child care providers by supporting the highest standard of care for children in Minnesota's diverse licensed family child care homes through education, resources, recognition, and advocacy. MLFCCA supports this bill, and as you hear the providers speaking today, I urge you to take into consideration these facts. The Child Care Assistance Program is intended to help low-income families afford their child care bill. The money given to these parents for child care is not the provider's money until the parent signs the child care assistant reimbursement forms as payment for the care that was given. If money that has been given to parents for child care is being depleted by fees, we run the chance of providers who will stop taking children on the program. This will reduce the availability for quality child care environments for low-income families, which we just spoke about. It will be a limited amount of programs available at that time if that happens. And as you know, quality child care programs play a great role in a child's readiness for kindergarten. Family child care providers are private small business owners and are not employees of the state. These payments to providers should never be looked at as income from the state that can be divided up anywhere but to the provider directly. Minnesota Statute Subdivision 8 of Minnesota 119B.09 provides that receipt of federal, state, or local funds by a child care provider, either directly or through a parent who is a child care assistant recipient, does not establish an employee-employer relationship between the child care provider and the county or state. If there are fees that need to be collected from providers, there are other options for this rather than deducting them from assistance to low-income families. In closing, I would like to thank you for your time, and once again, please have an open ear to these providers speaking today and help us support the highest standard of care for children in Minnesota's diverse licensed family child care home. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Acri. Members, questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to kind of ask similar questions to the ones that Representative Hosh asked, kind of about how the flow of money actually works here. So could you kind of take us through that? If you have a family that's getting the child care assistance, how does it work? At what point do you actually get paid?
Sure. I think
Ms. Acri.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that there's two different ways. It's biweekly or monthly that you record the attendance of the child. Like she had said before, they come into our home and they have the chance to interview with us. And then the providers themselves have to be registered with the county or the state to receive child care assistance funds. The county or the state takes your rates and your policies and procedures and has them on file, and then when the parent comes to your home, so say they came for 4 weeks, I would document when the child was there, send it into child care assistance, and then they would make sure that all the paperwork is correct, that the parent is working, and that the co-payment has been taken from the parent. then that money is sent out to me. If there's a certain amount of money that's not covered, depending on how much I charge, if it's more with the rest of the children than the county will give me plus the copay, I need to charge that to the parent. So that money is actually billed before I receive the rest of that. And then what happens is we receive the money at that time afterwards.
Okay.
Does that explain?
Yeah. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, thank you. So as I'm understanding it then, the parent never touches the money that's coming from the state. It goes directly to the provider. And it sounds to me like it after you've submitted these forms that you've earned the money, then it's your money. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate?
Ms. Zachary.
That is the way that I would see it. That's correct.
Right, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, Ms. Zachary, I guess what I'm wondering is, do you think that the state, once you've earned that money, do you think that the state should be able to tell you how you spend your money that you've now earned?
Ms. Zachary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that the state is asking providers, you know, to meet certain requirements. So, yes, I need to spend the money in a certain way to make sure that I'm purchasing items or paying employees to give quality child care. I believe that the state's idea to give funding for these parents is to find quality care. So whatever the money that is given to me, I feel as though I have the right to decide how that's distributed throughout my budget. But yes, after it's given to me, it's in my hands, you know, where to place the funds. And if I choose to be a part of association or if I choose to pay fees somewhere else, at that time I could. But I would like to just say something real quick. Like, if I have a family on child care assistance, I also have other families on a wait list that aren't a part of child care assistance that would like that position. So I could say, yes, I will take a child on child care assistance, but I also could say, no, I could take a family not on child care assistance. I'm not having a problem filling positions. So whether it be from this family from their own pocket or from this family who says, this is the money for my child care and I give it to you, regardless, either way, the money is going to be spent the same way.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks. But, you know, I guess my point here is once that money is given to you, you've earned it. If you then decide that you want to belong to the Child Care Association or the one that you belong to or some other group or a union, if you make that decision that you want to belong to something, shouldn't you be able to spend your money? I mean, even if you get some of your money from unsubsidized children and others, this is your business. You've earned the money. It's your money. Shouldn't you be able to make the decision without the state telling you that you can't spend it on X, Y, or Z? Isn't that if you decide to go out and have a drink with your husband, isn't that your business and not the state's, and you're spending that money on that?
Ms. Zachary.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I agree to a certain extent. I would say that whatever the money comes in, I know that I make sure that goes out somewhere else to make sure that my business runs accordingly. So once everything is paid for, sure, I may spend it on whatever I need to outside of childcare. But I believe it needs to be into my bank account and into my possession before I make that choice and to have that right once I've received it in hand. Yes.
Well, I might add, Representative Liebling, I mean, the state in many areas of health and human services directs and dictates exactly how money is to be spent on particular services, so I don't think that would be unusual. Well, do you have a follow-up?
Well, I do, Mr. Chair, and I wasn't going to respond any more to the testifier, but, I mean, since you're saying that, I beg to differ. This is different because this is money that is being earned. When we pay a contractor, once they've earned the money and it's their money, we don't tell them how to spend the money. That's different than saying that if we're going to have a contract with you to buy a certain service, or in the case of family assistance, that if we're going to give you some money, you're going to have to spend it in certain ways. This is money that people are earning. She's not a welfare recipient here. This is a business who's under a contract who's getting money that she is earning. And once it's her money, I think she ought to be able to decide how to spend it. Now, whether there would be withholding or not, I think is irrelevant because I tell the state, for example, I get a check. It's my money that I earn from the state. I choose to buy long-term care insurance. The state deducts that for me. It's still my choice to buy that insurance. The state simply acts as an agent for me. So I really don't see that this is, I think this is more like that and not like things that we buy that we dictate how the money is to be spent.
Representative Franson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I believe that the intent of this bill is to prevent the union dues from being automatically deducted from the CCAP payments. Representative Liebling, do you believe that providers should be forced to have their payments deducted from their subsidy checks when it's ultimately meant for care of the children?
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think you're raising a straw man here, Representative Franson, because that is not before us, first of all. And, you know, if we want to talk about kind of the underlying issue here, the underlying issue is that people who want to be part of a union and choose to have their dues deducted could do that. No one is talking about forcing anyone to do anything, and that keeps getting raised here. But that is not what this bill does. This you can say that. The chair before told us we should discuss the bill. This bill says that certain payment cannot be deducted from funds distributed. You know, we could pass a bill that says Liebling's insurance can't be deducted from her paycheck. I mean, I think it would be the same thing. This is not about forcing anybody to do anything. That's not what this bill does.
Representative Franson? Okay, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the reading of this bill, I don't see it preventing us the free will of spending the money we're paid on what we choose to be paid. I see this bill as removing the state from being able to automatically do that. And part of this whole discussion is about free will. We've got people and entrepreneurs, many in my district have sent me letters, who have their own business. They have set up because they wish to have that freedom that having your own business can provide you, and they want the freedom of choosing. They don't want to have things automatically taken out. They don't want to be forced into anything. And I think this bill isn't saying, oh, we're taking away your freedom to associate, your freedom to have your funds go to anywhere. They still have the freedom if this bill passes. The only thing that's removed here is the state deducting before they get the money, funds. And I think that's the discussion, not a straw, whatever the appropriate term is, of taking away the freedom of these fine citizens to do what they wish to do with their money.
Representative Franson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. For those on the other side of the aisle, maybe they're not aware of the fact that Michigan attempted to do this. Union dues were taken out of the subsidy checks. And then in March 2010, the DHS director in Michigan ended the contract, citing, "The Union Council has not delivered on its original goals to enhance and improve the delivery and quality of care for children whose parents receive assistance from the department. That's why we will stop all funding, and because these providers are not state employees, we will also cease collecting union dues." Michigan also is attempting to unionize home health care workers, thus taking payments meant for parents of disabled children and taking that money that is meant for the parents to take care of their children and thus funneling it to the unions. And this is the type of the slow creep that we're trying to prevent. If the funds are meant to care for our children, we need to make sure that those funds are being directed for the quality of care. I mean, we're hearing that there is not enough money to go around for child care. How do you think having union dues deducted from this subsidy payment is going to help alleviate that waiting list?
Members, I'm going to go back to testifiers. This is great conversation and debate, but I think we ought to do it after we're done with the testimony. Our next testifier, if there's no other questions for Ms. Acri, we'll release her from the testifying table with our thanks. And Jennifer Parrish from Rochester. Jennifer?
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Parrish, and I'm a licensed family child care provider from Rochester. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 1766. There are roughly 8,500 family child care providers in Minnesota who are currently willing to accept payments through the Child Care Assistance Program, otherwise known as CCAP, on behalf of low-income families. Unfortunately, I have heard from many of these providers that they will no longer accept these payments if dues and fees are deducted out first. Some of them have already stopped accepting new CCAP families because they believe it's only a matter of time before this happens. I support this bill because if it's not passed, I believe the number of options available to families participating in the program will be significantly reduced. I also support this bill because the money set aside for this program is intended for families who need help. It's already suffering enough from recent cuts, and even before the cuts, there were families on a waiting list to receive assistance. Diverting even a small percent of the money dedicated to this program to a union or anyone else is wrong. There are many ways to collect union dues and fees without touching the funds from this program. Child care providers can actually sign up right now to become a union member and have dues taken right out of their bank account. I have the form right here. It's very easy to sign up. There's two boxes, and you include a voided check. That's it. And you are signed up. They automatically deduct your dues each month. If you want to look at it, you certainly can. With the simplicity of the auto pay system that they already have in place, there is no need to attach dues and fees to the subsidy program. I understand that there is a great deal of controversy surrounding the potential unionization of licensed family child care providers, but I am here today to urge you to separate this bill from that controversy. This bill is not saying that there can't be a union. This bill is not saying that there can't even be dues or fees. This bill simply ensures that the funds set aside for the Child Care Assistance Program will continue to be used only for that purpose. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, questions to the testifier? Seeing none, we'll move to our next testifier. Thank you, Ms. Parrish. Heather Falk from Cloquet, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Heather Falk. I've been a child care provider in Cloquet, Minnesota for 10 years. As a licensed family child care provider, I urge you to support this bill, 1766. I have 14 children enrolled in my program, and currently I have two. And that started in September. Prior to September, I had seven children in my care on the CCAP program for over 4 years. Before that, I had none. So my numbers have fluctuated over the past 10 years. That's kind of the nature of the program. In a few of the other states, I revised this somewhat because of trying to keep it the anti-union, but with some of the questions over here on this side, I feel like I need to address it. One of the worries is in a few of the other states, they charge a 2% service fee for union dues. For me, if my children number is at 7 on CCAP, that's $720 a year. Out of my pocket, that means my year of year-round curriculum and all the art supplies that go with it. Or that $720 could pay for my music and movement specialist that I hire in to work with the children and new outdoor equipment. It's a large amount of money. I'm a single mother. I have three children that I care for on my own without any outside help. I have to charge a bottom line, $125 a week per child. My low-income families can hardly pay the difference already in what the CCAP reimbursement rate is and what I charge. But I have to charge this to each family to maintain the quality care for my children and to support my family. In many of the state contracts with the union, the cost of dues, in many of the contracts from the union or the executive orders, no mention of dues or compulsory dues have come through. Only after the union is established in Illinois, Maryland, New York, Ohio, Oregon, Washington, and Wisconsin, and Michigan, dues came up afterwards. This bill would protect it from being withdrawn from the CCAP program. Not saying that they can't join a union, not saying that they can't pay dues if they belong, but compulsory dues is a worry for me. And a lot of the providers in my area have stated that they would not take child care CCAP recipients. I have a letter from a parent in there, Rachel Barchek, everybody should have. She actually called in our town, and I'm a little town.
Yeah, members, I would point out, if I could interrupt for just a moment, there is a packet of written testimony that each of you have been given today, too, so just to reference that.
She's one of my CCAP recipients. She called, I think, 33 or 34 child care providers. Only four said they would continue to accept CCAP payment if compulsory or any kind of monies were to come out of it. Child care providers are saying they won't take it. This is taking away a huge parent choice. She'd have four providers in my town. That's 40 children, and all 40 children then would be lumped into a low-income grouping where we have a mixed batch of kids and wonderful diversity. That's taking away from parent choice. I support this bill, and I urge you to also. CCAP's a benefit for low-income families, and they've already been hit pretty hard, and do not need the extra stress on who will take care of my child rather than who do I want to take care of my child. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Falk. Any questions for the testifier? I would also ask testifiers if you kind of stick around, you know, maybe near the testifying table so that as we get into discussion after testimony is done, we can have questions of testifiers as well. Yes, Ms. Falk.
Mr. Chair, I on the CCAP program, I had one more thing because there were some questions. You know, the parents sign up for the benefit. They get this packet and they fill it out. When we accept CCAP providers and we register for it, we get this packet and fill it out. When a parent calls me and they ask if I have availability, I say yes. We set up a meeting. I do it outside of care because anytime you have somebody new in the daycare and there's children there, I need to focus on the kids and not the parents, and so I do my interviewing after. Usually that's when a parent will say, I receive state subsidies, and then I offer them to come visit the daycare in the following week for a drop-in to check me out. That's kind of how our selection process goes. I then get in the mail, once they've enrolled with me and they understand that they have to pay the difference, this authorization form, which just says they have X amount of hours by X amount of hours. Once they start, each week I fill out one of these forms where I put in the hours, how many hours they're authorized. I mail this in or drop it off at county. A week later, our county is very fantastic. Since they switched to the new MC squared, payments are pretty rapid. I'll get a payment within a week's time from submitting this paperwork. It shows what the deductions are. Taxes aren't withheld from these payments. The IRS doesn't see this as a paycheck for me. Taxes aren't withheld. Yes, I get the money, and once I deposit it into my account, I do have to keep accounting for it and then pay my 30% business tax at the end of the year. But it's not really my paycheck. It's a coupon or a scholarship, per se, to help parents pay for my services. That's my little piece on my CCAP families. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Falk. Any questions to the testifier? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Falk. I mean, you know, first of all, you know, I just want to say that, you know, we all appreciate the work that you do and the work that child care providers do. I mean, it's not an easy business to be in, and we know you do it because you love the kids and you want to, and you enjoy being with them and you want things to be good for them. So let me just put that out there. But, let me just ask you, though, do you belong to a child care association, and do you pay dues to that association if you
Ms. Falk.
Mr. Chair, I do belong to the Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association, and I do pay $35 a year. It's a business choice that I make to do so.
Right. And, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
And so, Ms. Falk, if you were to decide that you wanted to join a union, do you think that you should have the right to pay union dues if you made that choice?
Ms. Falk.
If the union were to come through, I would consider joining, because in order to get change done, and if it's out there, I will state I am opposed to this movement. I think it's fundamentally wrong, but you need people in there that will push for the change. In a lot of the states we've seen, they've not had those pushers. I hope that I could be. I would be willing to pay dues, but under the form Jennifer had, where it would come directly out of my savings or my checking or off of my credit card. Like every other business expense that I have, I automatically do because that's my business account that all of my money is funded into and that I budget off of.
Okay. All right, Representative Allen.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Falk,
yeah.
Again, I commend you for the services that you provide. And my question is, you disagree that this statute would take away your choice, do you agree that this statute is prohibiting something that hasn't even happened yet? I mean, you right now you're not required to pay union dues, right? I mean, you're not you haven't made a choice to collectively bargain, to consent to collectively to union participation. Is that my understanding?
Ms. Falk.
Mr. Chair, under the executive order as it stands, I am a CCAP recipient, which means that I will be represented by the union regardless if I am a member or not currently. And because of the research done in all the other states, these contracts in all the other states are pretty much the same. They look the same with minor functional differences because CCAP runs different in each state. The one thing that does happen is the fair share dues or the agency fees or compulsory dues are removed from the CCAP program, and I am fundamentally against that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Allen.
Ms. Falk. So I'm just trying to understand here. You view this statute as forcing that it protects you from being forced to collective to be part of a union. Is that
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Falk.
No, it doesn't force me to be collective bargaining. This statute, in my opinion, has nothing to do with the right to bargain, with the rights of the union to collect dues or fees. What it says to me is low-income families' money stays low-income families' money, and nobody for any reason should be taking from that. As a union member, and I chose to pay dues, I would sign that up underneath my checking, credit card, or savings account as a direct draft, like I do with my insurance or the Aflac type things, and I have like workman's compish kind of insurance, and my liability insurance all comes through that. It's not taken out of CCAP. Nothing should come from those low-income families.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Allen.
Mr. Falk, are you aware that there are other unions where the state does withhold union fees?
Yes.
And
no problem. Nobody's going to come and take you away in handcuffs.
I'm new at this. So you have
Representative.
Okay. It follow up question.
Certainly,
Ms. Chair. Ms. Falk. So again, the state. You don't view this as a statute that, I mean, so effectively, if the union does not have a mechanism to collect the funds, that it diminishes their ability to function. I mean, to protect, to provide any benefits. Should you choose as a group to exercise collective bargaining rights to participate, if you consent to it. At some point, then the union is going to be very difficult for the union to protect you because it's not going to be able to collect those fees. So I fail to see how you view this as not taking away your right to collectively bargain. That the state is actually preventing it's restricting collective bargaining rights. It's taking away your right, a right you haven't even had a chance to. You vote on it, that it's that's prohibiting something that hasn't even happened yet.
Ms. Falk, any response?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I don't feel it's prohibiting at all. This money is not my money, and my taxes aren't automatically like any other paycheck. There's nothing's taken from it. It is a coupon, like food stamps. A family's given $300 in food stamps. That store owner doesn't get to automatically withdraw their employees' union dues from the food stamps before the family has a chance to spend it on the food. I look at it like that. Once the money that comes through is in my account and the parent pays their difference and it's in my account, it's very easy to collect dues that way. This doesn't stop anybody, and it just mimics the federal laws that are already in place protecting low-income families and choice. And there are a lot of child care providers throughout the state of Minnesota who will not accept CCAP anymore if fees for anything are deducted from this, because we're working at such a deficit and we love these families, but they can't afford to pay more. If I have $25 extra coming from it, my mom, who budgets down to the cent, won't be able to purchase diapers or milk, that kind of stuff, if she has to give me that additional $25 out of her check. So I don't see it as barring my right to organize. I can still belong to the union. If the union membership chooses to set up agency fees or share fare fees, send me a bill. Or send me the option card. I'm sorry, Jennifer has the option card, which is just a check a box and voided check, and it can automatically come out each month. It shouldn't hinder the union at all in collecting dues. But it does protect these low-income families, one, for parent choice. If providers are worried about this money coming out, and there are a lot of providers who are fundamentally against this movement, and a lot of providers who don't agree that it fits their business model, we don't want to take those providers away from the parents. And these low-income families really need to have a good choice of quality parents or providers. Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, we have...
Thank you.
If you have a follow-up, that'll be fine, Representative Allen. I just want to remind us we've got two more testifiers in favor of, and I want to offer equal time to anybody who has not signed up yet for the other side. Okay, so I just want to make sure that we understand we're trying to be fair here as far as equal time for testimony. So please, Representative Allen, proceed with a follow-up if you want. But we should also try to get to the other testifiers yet.
I'm finished. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kiffmeyer, Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think this is just a fundamental situation where we look at independent private business owners being able to make a choice. And just a real clear distinction, are you going to be mandated, or do you get to have a choice? That's all. And I think what you're saying is you can see some value. You just want to make it a choice and let other people make a choice on their own terms and not have this be a mandated association. And I just really appreciate that, Mr. Chairman, and that's all.
Thank you. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I need some clarity. I'm trying to better understand what I'm hearing. And because I think what could happen or will happen is that it allows providers to make a choice about whether or not they would like funds deducted from the money they get from the state, right? That's a choice. No one's going to force anyone to be a part of this. It's not a force. It's not a mandate. It's a choice. And so my question is, I hear continually from testifiers that providers will no longer take CCAP parents. And I know from my own experience from hearing providers in my district that a lot of providers don't want to take CCAP's parents is because they're not getting paid for the services. I mean, it is so low right now that and the cost to provide the service is so high that it doesn't make sense. So we can say that's because of union or just because of the fact that the rate is so low that they decide not to be a service provider for CCAP parents. And I'm just really grappling with trying to understand how if as a child care provider, I provide a service for a month to a child, I'm not getting any fees, any money for that services. I send a voucher or whatever to the state, it may have to wait another month or so to receive money for the services I already provided, and then to not have the choice to say, well, if a union come along, I would like to choose to have money taken out of money that belongs to me because I provide the service, that I choose to decide whether or not I would like funds taken out to cover my union dues. That is a choice that I make. No one is forcing me to make that choice. It's money that I've already owed, that's owed to me for services, for a service I provided. Then you can look and say, well, I would, you know, wait for my reimbursement. I would put that check in the bank, and then I will pay union dues. Either way, the money is mine to choose to do as I choose with it, whether it comes from my bank account or whether I decided that it's more convenient for me to have the state take that early deduction without the burden of me, as with my busy life, trying to make an extra payment with all the other payments I'm making. But I think it's a clear choice. It's not a force. It's not no one, you know, putting that extra burden on you. So I'm trying to understand, you know, and maybe parents are not getting the truth about what it looks like to have a choice to join a union or a choice to have money deducted, because we don't have a choice when we are getting, when providers are getting paid at a rate that is not at the same rate of those parents who are not part of a CCAP.
Members,
and I guess I would like you to respond, I mean, if you'd like to respond to any of that.
Very good. I just want to ask quickly on the point I made earlier, is there anybody here right now who wants to testify against this bill, just so that we know who we've got and offer time for those people? Anybody who wants to testify against, please raise your hand or somehow indicate to me that you're here to testify against. Okay, Ms. Falk.
All right, first, it shouldn't take a month to get your payment. It's 2 weeks of service, and then you turn in your paperwork on Friday. I usually have my check by Wednesday, so there's not a big wait. And out of the 11,300 providers, 8,000 are on the list to accept CCAP payments. The numbers that are given with the 4,000, that's just who's received a check in the last year. But it doesn't mean Child Care Resource and Referral has 8,000 providers signed up to accept CCAP payments as it stands right now. And as far as the choice goes, the concern here is, I'm sorry, I have to go here, I'm very sorry. The following states started with executive orders that authorized unionization without compulsory dues, just like the executive order that is here in Minnesota now. The first citation is to the executive order, the second is to the statute. In each of these states that started off as non-compulsory unionization, Illinois, Maryland, New York, Ohio, Oregon, Washington, and Wisconsin, until Wisconsin's HB1 came into play, but prior to that it was. And then Michigan. In Michigan, $4.5 million over the course of 2.25 years was removed from CCAP funds. In the calendar year of 2009, $2 million in compulsory fees were taken from 34,000 child care homes. These aren't providers who chose to have that money taken from their CCAP payments. These are providers who had to pay their agency fees because the union was present. In 2010, $1,821 in compulsory fees were taken from 32,000 child care providers. This goes on until March of 2011, which was around $750,000, when the government finally stepped in and said the union wasn't doing what they were supposed to, there was no employer-employee relationship, and dues should not come from CCAP funds. I have the cited source from the legal case, along with the executive orders and the state statutes, if anybody wants the sources for those facts. It is fine if a union member wants to pay dues. That CCAP money belongs to the family. Until it hits our account, it is the family's funds. The threat of this happening in our state is enough to scare providers right now from wanting to accept CCAP people. We are paid, underpaid. There should be more money into the CCAP program for these families. 7,000 parents should be out there working, my ex-husband being on that list.
you know, but he doesn't, he's got three other children that are not related to me, and he's on the list, so he's not working because he can't afford childcare. I feel for these people, but this money needs to stay within this program. It is not an inconvenience at all to any union member to have it drafted from their accounts. It's how we operate our business, and nothing else comes out of those CCAP funds. I don't have an option to give to charities on that. I don't have an option to have my health insurance copay taken from that. My taxes aren't directly withdrawn from that. We get to save that up for the end of the year and pay it in a big lump sum. That money needs to be just for the family and for the peace of mind for providers to know that it will not be compulsively taken out. And in a lot of states, there's a box on there that says, I authorize union to take out dues, even in the fair share capacity, for taking CCAP. So I'm volunteering to let them do that, even though I don't want to be a union member, and we're trying to protect the families to have parent choice and to keep their... This is really, truly not, let's stick it to the union. This is just to protect that money for those low-income families because they need choices. And they can't afford to pay more, and I can't afford to take less. I hope that answered your question.
Representative Peterson, to the testifier.
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just, you know, it seems to me as I'm listening to this that we have a bill here that is preempting any action. I mean, there's nothing in the executive order that mandates this. You are looking at other states and saying it might happen here, so let's have a bill ahead of time. Yeah. And wouldn't we wait and to see what's going to happen with all of this before we have a bill like this? It seems to me we're putting the cart before the horse here. It just, as I'm listening, what you're suggesting may or may not happen. There's nothing in the executive order that would certainly indicate this would happen here. And it seems that bill could come back at some point in time if it did, and you could certainly do the same thing. But we don't have anything to even, I mean, this is really preempting something that we don't know is even going to happen.
Well, Representative Peterson, in light of the fact that we've heard testimony here today that this has, in fact, happened in other states, there's an old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We have two more testifiers, if we could move to them. Ms. Falk, thank you very much for your testimony. Please stick around in case there are questions from the committee. Our next testifier is Judy Sanda from Carleton County.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Ms. Sanda, welcome to the committee.
Reform Committee. My name is Judy Sanda, and I've been a child care provider for over 32 years. Over 300 children have come through our doors, and I love my job. I have a college degree. As a C3 licensed daycare provider, I urge you to support HR 1766. You guys make me nervous. I've been doing child care for so long that I remember when CCAP payments were sent directly to the parents, who then paid me out of their pockets. We at that time, 15 years or so ago, lobbied you, the legislature, to have those funds directed to us, the providers, to ensure that the state and federal funds were being allocated for child care. I am one of the 8,500 licensed daycare providers willing to accept families who receive financial assistance through the CCAP program. At this time, I have 4 children out of the 14 in my care who receive CCAP payments. The largest number of CCAP children I have had at one time is 7. If any other entity into my independent small business through dues or fee collection via my CCAP payments, my licensed family child care program may be one less option in Carleton County. Please support 1766 HR. All right.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, any questions to the testifier? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to ask you if, you know, you're concerned about union dues being deducted from CCAP. Were you concerned about the cuts that this legislature made when the cut went from 5% to 2.5% last year in terms of CCAP funding? I mean, they really cut. Absolutely. And I think those are the issues we really should be talking about here, to maintain adequate funding, not worrying about whether some possible union dues and choice might be an option for taking out of the CCAP. I really think we ought to be all working together here to maintain higher rates for all the CCAP students. And that's just, I think, a point that we need to make here.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Sanda.
I think that we aren't quite all on the same page, you guys. We are voting yes on this bill because we do not want that money to come out of these funds that are set for these children. That's a lot of money. Out of my pocket, that's a lot of money. I do my job because I love it. I always have. And I don't want to give it up. But I will probably have to consider not taking CCAP children.
You shouldn't have to.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just saying, you shouldn't have to. This is a choice issue, and it hasn't happened. And I think we ought to be working instead on trying to increase the funding. And also some other exciting things that could happen that would provide more services for our students if we had the opportunity to work together. But that's a dialogue I won't go into today. It would take too long.
Representative Franson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Peterson, this kind of reminds me of if a house was on fire, would you wait to call the fire department until the house had completely burnt down, or would you try to, stop the fire from destroying your house? Basically, this is what the providers are doing. They are trying to stop this legislation from happening before they have to wait for the bill to pass of the union dues being taken out before, they have to come back to the legislature and try to amend it so that the union dues are stopped.
Well, Mr. Chair and
Representative Peterson,
I wouldn't call the fire department a month in advance and say, I think I'm going to have a fire, so I'd like to let you know so that maybe you can stop it. I think I'd wait until that happened, and then I would call at the last minute when the fire happened, I'd call the fire department.
Members, it is a policy committee, and certainly bills are in order that propose state policy. The policy proposed here is that we not allow this. So let's move on to the next testifier. Ms. Sanda, thank you for your testimony. Pat Goetz from Dakota County is next. Ms. Goetz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you for giving us this opportunity today. We're really grateful for this. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Pat Gentz, and I've been a licensed family child care provider in Dakota County for 28 years. I'm also here today in full support of House File 1766, which prohibits the extraction of any dues or fees from child care subsidy payments. There are many reasons why I support this bill. Perhaps the most important is that CCAP is a public benefit that is intended to help low-income families pay for the care of their children. CCAP is not a benefit intended for child care providers. To deduct any fees from CCAP payments will directly deprive these struggling families of financial resources that they desperately need to pay for the care of their children. Not only will the deduction of fees from CCAP payments deprive needy families of essential financial resources, it will also limit their choices among child care services available to them. It only makes good sense, common sense, that any payment of dues or fees should be made between the provider and the organization, with no other party being involved. CCAP is intended to serve one purpose and one purpose only: to help working families afford child care, to take scarce financial resources from working families and home-based child care businesses and transfer these resources to anyone else is directly at odds with its purpose. I fully support House File 1766 as it would protect both families and providers. And I'm asking that you would also support this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gentz. Any questions for the testifier members? Representative Moran, and then Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it has come so clear to me what I think I'm hearing from you guys. And I'm hearing a fear. I'm hearing a fear that, you know, you have, your funds have been reduced so much that any more funding that will come from the CCAP money before it comes to you is will be really hard. And, you know, I hear you say that, you know, this is funding that the state give to low-income families so that they can have child care services for their child so they can work. But I also think it is definitely funding that the state gives to the provider who is taking the risk, who is making a choice to provide services for low-income children and for families. So as much as it is for the parents of low-income parents to have an opportunity to go to work and have child care provided for them, it is also an opportunity for providers to provide a services at a lower rate that they will probably receive from someone who is not seeking the CCAP's fund. And I definitely hear that, you know, because the rates are so low, why should we have to have more money deducted from these CCAP funds? And again, it is a choice. It's not something that you will have to do, you should do, or someone's going to force you to do. It is a choice of yours to make happen or not. So I just wanted to, that's the way I see it.
Okay, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And not so much to this testifier, but kind of more in general to the past testifiers, too. The problem, I think, the misunderstanding here is what does this bill actually say? This bill does not just say that you can't have something deducted involuntarily. It says that the union dues or fair share fees may not be deducted. In other words, if you want it to be handled through the state, this bill takes away your choice. This bill takes away choice. It doesn't give anybody choice. And you know, businesses do make choices. I also do want to comment on this analogy that was made earlier about food stamps. This is not like food stamps. Food stamps are given to the family to then go and choose a business to spend that money. That is not what we're doing here. Mm-hmm. From everything I've heard from the testifying table, this is money that the child care provider has earned. It's their money. It just hasn't been given to them yet. And yes, it's not a salary. It's money that their business has earned that hasn't been transmitted to them yet. But if that business owner should say, I would like the state to perform a service for me and do some withholding for me, what this bill does is say, you don't get that choice. Now, I understand some of you are saying this isn't about stopping unions. Some people are saying it is about stopping unions. But if you look at the language of the bill, all this bill really does is take away your choice to do something which you don't even know if you're going to have the choice to do yet. But it just limits your choice. That's all this does. And whatever you say about what's happened in other states, you know, that may or may not happen in Minnesota. I mean, it hasn't happened in Minnesota, and under the governor's executive order, that's not what would happen. As I understand the executive order, if you don't want to be part of the union, vote no, and if the union is elected, don't join, and then you don't pay. That's how I understand it. And but if you go back to this bill takes away choice.
Ms. Eck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I am a business, and I do accept services from child care providers. So, yes, money was given to them, just like food stamps were, and they chose to go to Cub Foods, or they chose to go to Rainbow, or they chose to go to Willow Tree Daycare with their child care assistance payment. So I am a business that accepts that money. On top of it, I don't see anybody here testifying to say, I don't agree with this bill. So I just want you to take everyone here and hear what they're saying and say yes. And I don't have to take child care assistance payments. So this is not a hardship for me not to take children on child care assistance payments. I have one child out of 20 families that I serve that's on child care assistance. I'm open to anyone, but I've only had one in the past 7 years come to me. It's not a hardship for me. I just don't want the money that I have worked for, that a family has chosen to pay me for, to be any money to be taken out of that. It should go into my bank account, and at that point, make a choice. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, I do want to ask, is there anybody who want, let's get through the testifiers first, members, and then we can have a wide open dialogue about this. We're going to wrap that up and vote on this bill before 4:30. So any other testimony from the audience? Anybody here who wants to testify for or against the bill, please indicate now or come up to the testifying table would be the best way to show me. I am not seeing anybody. So with that, members, I have a list. We'll start with Representative Murphy. We have Representative Franson, Representative Mack, Representative Benson, and I'm sure we'll have others. So Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers, many of you are in St. Cloud, and it's good to see you again, and I appreciate your input today, and I appreciated it then. I've done, you know, more reading and trying to understand this issue. And I want to tell you that I don't support the bill. So I know that there are a lot of people here who have testified for it, and I've heard from people who are for it and not for it in the district I represent. And I don't support the bill, and here's why. The governor's executive order is very clear. And I know that people are worried about what's happened in other states, but we're the North Star state. We're Minnesota. We do things differently. And the governor's executive order says no one will be forced to join the union, and if the union's elected, no one's going to be forced to pay fair share, right? So this is such a voluntary option for those child care providers who wish to join. And for those who wish to join, they should get to decide how the money gets transferred, whether they pay through, as one person suggested, payroll deduction, or with their credit card, or with their deduction from their banking account. They should get to decide that. That should get decided by that group of people who volunteer to join. And the thing that is bothering me the most, and it's why I asked the questions in the beginning about the status of CCAP, the waiting list, and what we're paying, is I love the passion from each of you that have come to testify. And I love your commitment to these families. And I share that commitment. And that budget took a big cut in this last cycle. And it's been flat for years before that. So any inflation that has occurred, and there's inflation, the child care providers have been eating that, right? So it is underfunded. There's a waiting list. And instead of putting our energy into fighting that together, instead we're fighting over the margins. I'm seeing largely women who provide child care to children coming at loggerheads with one another over the margins, over whether or not a little bit of money might go into a union, instead of fighting for more funding into CCAP, which I bet we agree with. We shouldn't be, and when there's such scarce funding as there is for this, and in so many parts of the human services budget, we see decent people fighting over the scarce resource. We should be fighting together for more funding. This is a false fight among providers, the ones who want to chew together for more funding. This is a false fight among providers. The ones who want to choose, if the union is elected, get to choose. Those who don't won't have to join, and you won't have to pay a fair share fee. And I don't think this bill is necessary, because you already have that option before you. Thank you.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a child care provider myself for about 5 years, I can empathize with the budget cuts to the child care assistance program. I had numerous families that were on that program, and it was a blessing for those families to be able to know that their children were at work, being taken care of with the assistance of the government. And some had no copays, and some had a couple hundred dollars worth of copays for the month. And that was a struggle. And also sometimes it was a struggle if I would sit with the parents and we would discuss what my rate was, and my rate was $115 a week for 4 to 5 days of care, or $23 a day if it was a per day contract. And the county reimbursed me per child, and this is for preschool up to school age, or toddler to school age, was $21.57 a day. So there was a difference that if I felt that that parent could not make that difference a day, that I would subsidize that family, never question them about it. And sometimes the family would say, you know what, it's not a hardship for me, I appreciate what you're doing, and I am able to pay that difference. And that was a business decision that I and the family made together. And on top of being a child care provider, you know, I had various instructors that came in that that sometimes I would have to subsidize the music teacher coming in because the family on assistance, and sometimes even those that were paying cash, could not afford the extracurricular activities that my business provided. But once again, that was a business decision. But yes, you know, there is 7,000 people looking for a job, needing care. And so, yes, I suppose that is something that we should be addressing instead of fighting this battle. But however, the legislation is before us. This is a real issue that the providers have, and more providers than not are having the issue of being forced to unionize. Now, the executive order says there will be no fair share dues, there will be no union dues. But, you know, if this was truly voluntary, if joining the child care union was truly voluntary, the executive order would not be needed. The people, the union, or the child care providers are already able to join a union. We saw the card. Union dues are being able to be being deducted from their checking account. So, like I'm going to reiterate, is if it was truly voluntary, Governor Dayton and AFSCME and SEIU would not need an executive order.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that the bill needs to move forward unless the governor is going to rescind his executive order. And it's important for a couple of reasons. And it goes to the executive order itself. And unless suddenly the governor has had an epiphany about right to work, I'm not sure how this all works, that suddenly we can choose one industry from another and decide that they can be or they can't be organized or forced to be organized. So I'm not sure how that will work. However, with that said, I think what the bill does is it does force us to look at how the money's being spent, and is it going to the right purpose, and is it going to the families with need, and more importantly, is it going to the children? And out of respect for the chair, I didn't say anything regarding the earlier testimony with the 7,100, but I have lots of questions about it, and I have some real concerns about how much money is being budgeted. You know, how's that list created? Is it means tested? Is it first come, first serve, and all those things? But as it pertains to the bill, I'm for it, and I think that it's going to be difficult to overcome our differences. But it's important. I really think it raises the question that most of us have on our mind in terms of organizing and isn't it an appropriate vehicle to even talk about? You know, is it government's job? I think we need to have a roll call and put people on record for where they support, you know, the children or someone else.
Okay, a roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call on the vote on the bill. Representative Franson.
Would the representative from MLFCC, Minnesota Family Licensed Child Care Association, come up? Ms. Acree?
Ms. Acree, sorry.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Ms.
Yes,
Acree?
Go ahead. Representative Franson.
Would you be willing to tell us the difference between your organization and, let's say, an AFSCME or an SEIU?
Ms. Acree.
Mr. Chair, well, providers have the choice at this point, as of we've heard possibly down the road, maybe not having a choice to be a part of association or of a union. When providers choose to be a part of the association, there's membership benefits that they're allowed to be a part of. It's $35 a year to be a part of this. And then also, local associations are also a part of MLF-CCA as a membership, and we offer free trainings, different things that would benefit the provider as a business, and we're there to support them. Like I said earlier, our mission statement is to support the highest level of care for children, and that's their main goal. So those who are a part of the association choose to be there. We give membership benefits. Oh, I'm sorry. Hello, and the big one, why I'm here, legislative advocacy. I'm an advocate as well as the other employees or people who work for MLF-CCA or even members sometime will come and testify representing MLF-CCA to represent family child care providers. If the union was put into place, it's my understanding that I might not have the choice to come here anymore as an MLF-CCA member or speaker of or a provider myself. And so MLF-CCA is a way for providers to be able to come and speak to you guys and has been here to support me as a provider. Was that?
Representative Franson?
Is MLF-CCA a political organization?
Ms. Zachary.
Mr. Chair, no, it is not.
Mr. Chair? Representative Franson.
Mr. Chair. Ms. Acree, do you endorse candidates?
Ms. Acree.
Mr. Chair, not that I'm aware of.
Representative Franson.
No further.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you. I can't let that go. Okay, and what if since you don't have lobbyists, I should ask, do you advocate here with lobbyists at the legislature? How do you get your point across that you need more money and that you have advocates here that will be here to talk about that as an association?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Zachary.
Can you ask the question again? I didn't understand.
Representative Peterson.
Well, you know, and I would say if you're talking about the unions, and obviously Ms. Franson was, they do have lobbyists who come here and who would be very strong advocates for increasing the money, and they would be here daily to talk about the need for increasing those dollars that go to CCAP, because it is important, and it's a shame that we have not done that. And I'm wondering what your association does then to advocate for the issues that you need.
Mr. Chair,
exactly.
I have been asked to come here on certain occasions to speak on bills that have been potentially affecting child care providers. I know that Katie Chase, the director, is here quite often. And then also we are part of an umbrella strategic planning, which has different associations. And different associations that we are under a big umbrella also come and are advocates and speak here, if that answers your question.
Representative
and
Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I would follow up. And have you been successful in getting more dollars on CCAP with your association?
Yes.
Ms. Zachary.
Really?
Representative Peterson.
And I would say that the cuts have continued. It's been inflationary. We've had no increases. In fact, we've had only cuts. So we've been pretty ineffective here as an association, I think, in advocating for the needs of these CCAP children. I'm going to follow up with one other issue, and that is,
Representative Peterson, go
does
ahead.
The association have any kind of regional hub or center where you might have group health insurance, where the providers could get group health insurance, or do they have a place where you could have a resource center for getting substitutes or a resource center where you could get help with students who need special ed? You might have a provider who's having trouble with special ed needs. Now, I know you get some professional development, but is there some sort of regional hub that would provide really even human resource services for if you've got other employees that you could get assistance or help and save some money? You could actually save money by having a regional hub that would provide some of those services. And I think that in the long term, that was some of the plans for the unions to be doing. And I'm wondering if the association has anything like that in place.
Ms. Zachary.
Mr. Chair, just as the unions have been doing so, we have also been working on life insurance, disability insurance for providers, which they cannot get. And we also have a mentorship program. We have different programs that are funded by the state to have mentors come out to different providers, work with them on contract issues, hiring employees to work with them, strengthening their quality child care program, also getting them accredited, so becoming more professional at having accreditation standards being met and learning how to do so. We also give them money to go towards that. So those are some of the areas. And then I also would like you, if she can go ahead and speak on the question that you had earlier about how we have increased or done anything here on the work on CCAP child care assistance programs.
Ms. Falk.
Mr. Chair, MLFCCA works with several other organizations, Child Care Works, the National Center. When that proposed 5%, they were here lobbying hard and were successful in getting it down to the 2.whatever% it was that the cut ended up being. So that was a success. Not a great one, but they were here doing it. And as far as the union being able to bring that in other states, in Washington, they were able to increase CCAP rates, but parent hours were cut dramatically. So the amount of hours providers could bill on behalf of parents, even though their rate was higher, they were making less money because they couldn't claim as many hours. The other in Illinois issue is the dues way outweighed the increase in subsidies that they got, and families receiving CCAPs decreased by a third. So the money to go into funding these programs, because all the states, everybody's kind of in the same boat. There isn't any money, and they fight for it. The providers got the increase, but the funds came from the same program, so less families were reached.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, finally, I would again say, using other states continually as the model is not the way we should be going about this. We're unique in Minnesota, and I think that the people here who would choose to join a union would set their own dues. It is a democracy. They would make the determinations about what would happen to the people who choose to belong. And there, again, is no mandate for either fair share or for joining. And so we do need to, I think, put aside what other states are doing and look at what we should do here. But
Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Just general comment. I support this bill primarily because of my observation of government programs and regulations. And what I mean by that is I don't think any of us in this room want to see happen what this bill's trying to prevent. Now, some of us say, well, it's not going to happen. But, when I look at government in general, and I'll just use the welfare program, none of the people who started the welfare program expected it to get to the point where it is today, where it's, has the potential to bankrupt us federally and even at a state level because of the expanding regulations and qualifications. So, one other example I'll give, with public school, we had ECFE programs, and the ECFE programs were not a part of the union contract. But then one day regulations changed, and the next thing you know, the ECFE workers were part of the teachers' union contract. So, what starts out well-intended, all right, can produce some negative results down the road. And what I see this bill is preventative medicine from, again, down the road, things all of a sudden change, and all of a sudden you're in a situation where what we're trying to prevent here is what happens with the government program, regulation, or whatever. So, in my opinion, that's why we need this bill. Finally, if we were a right-to-work state, I don't think this bill would be necessary, as each person could decide whether or not they wanted to belong to a union in their particular area or business. Last thing I was informed of was that as far as group health insurance, daycare providers can form an LLC and without a union and offer health insurance is the understanding I have. Thank you, Ms. Chair.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. The conversation's been enlightening. I just want to touch on one area that we've been talking about, and that is it's been touched on that businesses should have the option, if it's a convenience issue, for this to be, if there were to be union dues, to be taken out of these funds for convenience or whatever the fact might be, and that's a choice that the provider should have, and that's an option of choice. But I want to just point to, in statute 119B.03 subdivision 3 states that the child care assistance provided through the child care fund is considered assistance to the parent. And so under that premise, I think it's inaccurate to say that the business or the provider should have the chance or the choice for it to be convenient, for it to be deducted out in advance. The way this reads, it is assistance to the parent until that's been paid to the provider into the provider's account, and then the provider can decide where to pay those fees out of their bank account. But until it's in that bank account, it is considered assistance to the parent, not the provider. And so I believe that this bill upholds that statute and is a protection that we assure that this is assistance to the parents, not the providers, parents that desperately need it. And we can go round and round all day about the funding for CCAP, but that's not what we're here for today. That's another issue and certainly is a merited discussion. But I want to get back to the heart of the bill and who this money is intended for and protecting it for that, and it belongs to the parents. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to make this brief. First and foremost, I just want to make sure that some inaccuracies are addressed. And one is from Representative Gruenhagen, and you talked about the runaway welfare system. Well, if our state budget followed what our welfare budget is, it'd be about 60% less than what it was 10 years ago. The Minnesota Family Investment Program has 80% fewer enrollees into the program. So don't use stereotypes to try to make the point. The biggest increases is within MA, which is an elderly and disabled population. So I wanted to make that clear. Secondly, I wanted to thank the testifier. I'm sorry I don't know your name, but you did very well today. And I appreciate your viewpoint. And I think you have some good points and your fears that you don't want to be compulsory payments taken out of CCAP, I think, are warranted. Right now, as the bill is stated, though, it also takes away the choice if somebody does want to voluntarily contribute. I hope that as this bill moves forward, we could find some kind of compromise in which your concerns can be taken into place, but also leave that freedom of choice for providers who do choose to use whatever method they'd like to be to go forward. So I wanted to say that at this point, the bill's not in that order. This is the first of several stops, I'm sure, that we'll be able to discuss further. But also just wanted to make sure that clarification was made.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, want to correct a couple of inaccuracies. First of all, something was said about you wouldn't be able to come to the legislature if there was a union. Just plain not true. You have the right to come, whether as a citizen, whether as the head of an association, and the fact that somebody else is here at this table never, never stops you. And I want to say that to the public at large. People have a right to come here and address the legislature, and nothing is going to take that away. So let's just be very clear about that. The second thing I want to say has to do with what was brought up here a minute ago by Representative Mack about it's considered aid to the parent. You know, I guess I could ask staff about this, but, I don't know. I haven't looked at that statute. I don't know considered for what purpose. But I can pretty much assure you that if, for example, the provider provided those hours of care and then the person lost eligibility, that money would still go to the provider. That money is earned at that point and becomes the provider's money, and it doesn't have to hit their bank account. They at least have a right to those funds. So those funds are encumbered at that point when they're earned. So, I mean, I don't know if staff wants to take that up, but I think that I could look at the statute, but that sounds to me like a distinction without a difference here. That this bill takes away the option, which isn't even right now happening and may not happen, but it takes away the potential option for a business owner to ask the state to act as their agent to withhold some funds. That's all it does. It takes away choice. It doesn't give anybody any choice.
Ms. Falk, brief reply.
You know,
I'm not sure if you caught it when Judy Santa was up here testifying, but over 15 years ago, that money went directly to the family. We filled out the paperwork and said when we had care, the money was sent directly to the family. The family received it, and then they wrote us checks for it. We came here, and we lobbied you on our behalf and asked that this money, if it's set up for child care, should go into child care to cut down on wherever that money was going. And you did grant that. But that money is for the parents and used to go straight to the parents. And we appreciate that you've skipped the parents and sent it to us. But if it was still in that method, we wouldn't be sitting here now either.
Could we perhaps, I think Representative Liebling is asking a very valid question. Staff, Danielle, do you have any, I believe the statute you quoted is at least correct. I don't think, but let's see if we have a clarification.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Mack is correct. In 119B.03 subdivision 3, there is a sentence at the end of that subdivision that has to do with eligible participants that just states that child care assistance provided through the child care fund is considered assistance to the parent. Now, with Representative Liebling's point about what happens if a family loses their authorization or maybe their authorized hours are reduced, I don't know exactly how the county handles that as far as when the provider gets the notification and if they've already provided hours that are no longer authorized, if they would still be paid for that time or not. Perhaps there's someone here from DHS that could provide some clarity on that.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Anyone here from DHS? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's not exactly the question. If they provided authorized hours and then the person loses their eligibility, in other words, when you say it's assistance to the parent, the next question should be for purposes of what? So if a provider provides hours and then the person afterwards loses eligibility and they haven't gotten the check yet, if they don't get that check, I bet you there's going to be a lawsuit and I bet you the provider is going to win because they've earned that money. So yes, it's assistance for some purpose. I haven't read the statute and I don't know what the meaning of that is, but that money then is owed to that provider.
Representative Liebling, I think we do have somebody here from the department who might be able to help us out. If you could introduce yourself to the committee and then proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Mary Orr. I'm the director of the community department. That was me, sorry.
Go ahead.
At the Department of Human Services. And at the point of disbursement of the payment, and so it really is a very timing issue, but at the point of disbursement of the payment to the provider for the service that they provided, we would consider that to be the provider's funds at that point.
Okay, so my point of clarification is I think the bill in its union dues or fair shares may not be deducted from funds distributed, so the bill is speaking to not deducting from the funds as they're distributed, so prior to them being received by the provider.
Mr. Chair, at the point of distribution, we would consider that funding to be the provider's.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Representative Moran.
This is for staff. Thank you, Mr. Chair. When was that statute enacted?
Mr. Chair and members, the section was initially enacted, it looks like, in 1985, but it's gone through several changes since that time, so I don't know when or how long that specific sentence has been in that statute without going back through the history to figure that out.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Moran.
So, to me, it is clear that since the last legislation was changed to from giving payments to parents to the provider, that statute is outdated and needed to be revised because money no longer goes to parents. It now goes to the provider. And to me, it seems like it's outdated, and maybe we need to look at changing the statute to reflect the new.
That may be for another bill, Representative Moran. Thank you. Members, there is a roll call on the bill. We are going to move to a vote on the bill. Representative Lummer, do you want to make any final comments about your bill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this has been great. I think the testifiers have done a great job, and I think they reflect many of the sentiments of folks that I heard from, whether by email or phone calls or at rallies, that people really support this bill. And I think it's curious, the fact that we don't have any providers here that really want to have this option. So the card that they showed seems like a very good option for people who do want have the option of joining the union. So I will now renew my motion that House File 1766 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Lummer. There is a roll call on the bill, so the clerk will take the roll.
Got Walt.
Aye.
Mac.
Aye.
Gabler.
Yes.
Allen.
No.
Barrett?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Branson?
Yes.
Fritz? Grunhagen?
Yes.
Hosh?
No.
Huntley?
No.
Giffmeyer? Liebling?
No.
Lomer?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
McElfatrick?
Yes.
Moran?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Norton?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
Aye.
Okay. Fritz? And Kiffmeyer?
Okay, there being 12 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is adopted. The motion prevails and the bill is placed on the general register. Let's try that again. Okay, members, real quick, some housekeeping. Our next meeting is Wednesday, February 8th at 2:30 here in room 200. Bill deadlines have been released, so I'll announce those again. First deadline is Friday, March 16th. Second deadline is Friday, March 23rd. And the third deadline will be Friday, March 30th, 2012. There'll be no further business before the committee. The committee stands adjourned. Thank you, members.